Okay, good evening, and welcome to the Village Board meeting for February 27th. It's just a 5 after 7. If I can ask the clerk to please take the roll call.
Trustee Corsini?
Here.
Trustee Carji?
Here.
Trustee Stanky? Trustee Conti?
Here.
Trustee Dwyer?
Here.
Trustee Gibbs?
Here.
President Ducey?
Here. I can ask all you please stand to say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
Thank you. Nothing? Thanks, Mike. Okay, up next is item 4 on our agenda, which is the elected official comments and announcements. So maybe we'll start this week with Trustee Gibbs, please.
Nothing.
Okay.
I got one thing. Chief Weiss, my wife, wanted to me to pass along her thank you for participating in the Lincoln PTO. So what Chief Weiss did last year is that they auctioned off an item for the police to pick up the kids from the house and drive them to school in the morning. They get a big kick out of that, and that's always a nice little revenue fundraiser for the school. So thank you.
Did you win?
No, we did not win.
His kids get a ride to school without having an auction.
So, thanks.
Anyway,
Chief.
Thank you.
Nothing here.
Okay, great. Sheriff Hall?
Welcome back, Kathy and Susan.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. It's good to be back.
Welcome to everybody here. Thanks for coming. Myself, Lisa Shiner, and Clerk Halpern attended the West Central Municipal Conference legislative breakfast. Was it 2 weeks ago?
Yeah,
18. And always an action-packed morning. I always say I don't know if I'm more depressed after going to that meeting or more excited. I mean, after 27 years of being in government, it seems like we always keep talking about the same things. But I have to say that the actual legislative agenda that was put together is excellent, and it's got some great initiatives in there, so hopefully our work with this lobbying group will help bring about some significant changes legislatively. And that's all I have to report. Thank you.
Great. Yeah, thanks to all of that went to the breakfast. I understand it was a sold-out crowd, so I'm glad you all went and represented us. That was great. I have nothing more to report, so we'll go on to item 5, the consent agenda. If I can get a motion to move the item 5A through H of the consent agenda.
I move to approve consent agenda items A through H as presented.
Okay, I'll second.
Second, thank you. Any comments or questions regarding those agenda items?
I have one quick question for Chief Eggert. So will that be housed here, the engine? Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
I have one question.
Yes, Susan.
Thank you. I was just thinking about this bicycle situation where we auction off surplus property. And is it a possibility that we might want to consider in the future donating those bicycles to some needy?
We did that last year. And we have to clear out, so we have such a need to get those out. We're going to auction those off, and then to the next group, we're talking about donating again.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay. Good questions. Any other? Hearing none, I will ask the clerk to read the items and then take the vote.
Item A, regular Village Board meeting minutes, February 13th, 2017. B, award bid and contract for William Street Alley to Schroeder Asphalt Services for $122,179.85. C, declaration of surplus property, recovered stolen bicycles, ordinance. D, declaration of surplus property, public works chipper truck, ordinance. E, intergovernmental agreement with the City of Berwyn of reserve fire engine. F, monthly financial report, January 2017. G, January 2017 accounts payable, $1,503,534.22. And H, village administrator's report.
Okay, very good. Should we take the vote on these, please?
Trustee Carji?
Yes.
Trustee Conti?
Yes.
Yes.
Trustee Dwyer?
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs?
Yes.
Trustee Corsini?
Yes.
Motion passed.
Okay, very good. Thank you. So we'll move on to our recommendations of boards, commissions, and committees. The first one is the traffic and safety. This is amending Title IX of the Village Code, resident-only parking on the 1,000 block of Jackson Avenue. I'm going to ask a trustee to give me the motion and second it, and then we'll have discussion. This is kind of a leftover, a hangover from last meeting regarding this the resident-only parking issue. So if I can get a trustee.
If it pleases the board, I'd like to make a motion to reject the Traffic and Safety Commission in lieu of an alternate recommendation first. So make a motion to reject the recommendation of Traffic and Safety Commission to approve an ordinance to install resident-only parking zone on both sides of the 1,000 block of Jackson Avenue between the hours of 8 a.m. and 4 p.m., Monday through Friday, excluding holidays.
I hear a second on rejecting this.
I'll move to accept the recommendation of the Traffic and Safety Commission to approve an ordinance to install resident-only parking zone on both sides of the 10,000 block of Jackson between the hours of 8 and 4, Monday through Friday, excluding holidays.
Okay. So so this is a good time to discuss maybe not only your questions, but, Mike, your alternative ideas. I assume that's what you meant. You
yes.
Okay, let's go ahead.
It's six of one, half a dozen
yeah,
of the other.
Yeah, right, exactly.
In checking it out, the neighborhood, and thank you for including the what's around the neighborhood, mm-hmm. It seems that the resident-only aspect of it may cause inconvenience to the people that live on the block because of what they would need for visitors to come to their house and things like that if we did the resident-only. Whereas if we were consistent with simply restricting the parking to address the concordia of people parking in the neighborhood, then the people that lived on these blocks would be able to have, you know, guests coming and going without having to have permits versus just resident only. And it would actually relieve the burden on, well, not that it's a burden, it's just one more thing for Village Hall to deal with regard to parking passes and things along the line of enforcing the resident only versus no parking or restricted time limits of parking. I know this was addressed in the 500 block of Monroe. People were parking on that block to take the L downtown. It's more or less the same situation here. Restricted 3-hour parking was put and the problem was solved. So it seems like the most restrictive way to address the situation would go to permanent resident parking versus just restricting the hours and the length of the visits. So I was just throwing that out there for an option.
Yep, and you're right. We did talk about that last time. And I thought we were going to, so John, I don't know, or Eric, if we looked at the restricted times that Mike is referring to vis-a-vis the, you know, how well it really controlled the non-resident parking. Like you said, there's parts in River Forest that have, right, 3-hour.
Well, Thomas block. Street.
Right.
Yeah, that's
the street direct, you know, east-west, directly west of the college has that restricted parking.
Right.
It seems like maybe the village isn't doing the best job of enforcing what we already have on Thomas. It just seems, for the sake of consistency in the area, to have different kinds. Tom, is that your block?
No other way.
You're one further block up. So the two, William, Bonnie Bray, William and Clinton, on the south end of the campus, those are resident only. And on the west side of the campus, we have hourly restricted parking. It seems like we kind of got a hodge, but we have a very colorful map, for lack of better words. It just seems like consistency would be the best way to address the neighborhood. I don't think it would be in anyone's best interest to do what Oak Park has done around the high school by moving cars further and further away from the property that's causing the problem. So we had contact with Concordia. Did we get any love from them?
Yes, you'll see in the packet.
It's more for the benefit of the people. That
correct. Yeah, in the packet, we did reach out to Concordia. They were very responsive to our concerns. They sent a campus-wide email out that's included in the packet. And I don't think, and even in the survey from the community service officer, we're fairly confident, as you are, that the folks are coming from Concordia.
Right.
And the numbers seem high. Did you see the number? Sharon brings up a good point. Where is the 7,500 block of Thomas? Is that it right here?
Well, I drove by again today,
and
there were three cars parked just north of Augusta on Monroe, and two out of three of them had River Forest stickers on them in the resident parking only. They were all the way at the south end of that block.
What's that?
That was probably 1:30. So that tells me that someone's parking there and walking around the trees to get to Concordia. So again, that situation would not be addressed by this regulation because there were four stickers versus a 2 or 3 hour parking restriction for everyone. That would address.
It just seems these numbers are fairly high.
Someone had mentioned on the block that they don't ever see this kind of number, and they thought maybe there was an open house at Concordia during that week that may have caused, but I mean, I'm driving by all the time.
There's
14, and then it goes down to 6, 9, 8, and then somehow at 12 o'clock you have 18 vehicles. And I'm driving by that street all the time, and even residents that are there, they're like, we have never seen 18 vehicles, so maybe there was a special event during those days. I know it sounds, it seems like really disparate, right? I mean, because then you're looking at the 900 block of Jackson, which is right across the street, and you don't have that kind of number. Pardon me?
There's only six cars there every day. There's 14 to 12 and 8 cars every day.
On your block?
Yeah.
14 cars?
Yeah.
Well, since the last time they came to our meeting, you know, I made an effort to drive by as often as we could, and I concur. There's a lot of cars parked on the street. And it just seems like a 2 or 3 hour restricted would address it, and that would even address fellow River Forest residents from camping out on their block. Because if the other alternative is to park in the parking deck, and that's a block further away, I'm still going to park in front of their house if I have a River Forest sticker and walk to the Christopher Center. So if we're trying to get cars off the street, should get the River Forest cars off the street too.
The only issue with the restricted parking is that you think, you know, it's all in the enforcement piece of
right,
it.
So
you're going to even ask these guys to be more involved, not less.
Well, the Thomas,
the
hourly restricted thing would be symmetrical to what we're doing on Thomas. So we're supposed to be patrolling Thomas already for that. So I guess the choice before the board is, do we want resident or do we want hourly restricted? So that's,
and if you're going to do resident, then every other resident is 8 to 8. I mean, are we going to make a change on this block to be 8 to 4?
We can't. I mean, it's up to the board and it's up to the residents. I mean, we, you know, that might be circumstances. I'm assuming that's, you came with this recommendation because you've looked at it from a traffic and safety point of view. And
the request before you is the request from the resident,
right,
that was brought to the traffic and safety,
right,
that's been forwarded to you.
Right. So, I mean, it's our decision if we want it 8 to 4.
Are there residents here? Or like you're
yeah.
The,
yeah.
The,
if you want to speak, just come on up
or,
to the podium,
or,
and if you wouldn't just state your name, that would be great. I appreciate it, just so people can hear you.
Yeah, Yeah. My name is Nancy Fasano. I live at 1009 Jackson. And we did, I guess Jeff isn't here tonight, Jeff Loester, but,
no.
He's
no, right.
But Jeff is. He gave us all the options. And so we went around and talked to our neighbors, and the neighbors did agree they'd rather have it Monday through Friday to get everybody off the street. And the idea, if I don't know if you've ever gone down Thomas where you have the two-hour parking, it's packed.
Right.
So I don't think that's going to alleviate any of our parking. We're at the point now we can't even park in front of our own house. Like, we had a bathroom remodeled, and we'd have to park down the block because there was no parking in front of our house. And most of the people that park there are not students. At least from what we know, they are people who work in the education building.
I believe that.
And they are there from 8 to 4. Some of are there come at 10, and they're there till 6. That's, so they park there all day.
Yeah,
so
I believe that's more administrative than students.
It is.
Have you seen a change since that letter went out to Concordia?
Well, today, but I didn't know if that was because of the letter. And, you know, another thing that happened is I talked to two women who had sort of, on different days, blocked our driveway and asked them very nicely if they could possibly give us room to get in and out before we even did this. And they told me very bluntly that if I didn't like it, I should have signs put up. That they could really park anywhere they wanted to. So, you know, I don't really see that as working.
I know. People want trouble. I know.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah.
I agree.
So we just want to be able to park in front of our homes. We want to park in and out. Also, we would want except holidays, because Jeff also said if we don't put that except holidays and you just do the 2 to 3 hours, you can, on a holiday like Christmas, it's going to fall during the week this year, we can't have people over. You know, it applies to every day of the year.
Right.
That's what he said is in the rules. I don't know.
Well, that should be consistent on that Monday through Friday except holidays like the other ones. So even if you do go 8 to 4, we should add that except holidays line in there as well.
How does it say except holidays in your block?
Yeah, I think all of these say except holidays if you look at the
small
print.
It's not right in front of my house, but I haven't looked at it in a while.
It does seem like we have an enforcement issue as well on Thomas.
The count was done at one time during the day. We figured 10 o'clock. So I can't tell you if those are the same cars that were there at 4 o'clock. And I can't tell you if we are enforcing it right now. But just looking at this, the count was at 10 o'clock. So it was only done one day, not 2 hours later or 3 hours later.
And then
the one on Jackson, he did do a recount to see if it changed. And he tell the difference in the Jackson and the clock.
And I think we should maybe even revert back to traffic and safety to take a look at Thomas, because that street in and of itself is narrow, and even when you have the two-hour parking, mm-hmm. Somebody can't be driving east and then someone else coming in driving west, because there's no place to turn. So maybe traffic and safety can take a look at, you know, making that one side of the street parking only, because I think that corner seems to be extremely congested and really hard to traverse.
And move that to resident-only parking, you know, mm-hmm. versus time limit parking.
I mean, I don't know if we've had any complaints from
those
residents.
It's an awful street.
Well, mm-hmm. we do get the situation that we had around Roosevelt with the fire trucks.
Right, I mean, not able to.
You know, we worry about our free flowing. If somebody's coming toward us, we can't get through. But if the fire apparatus can't get to the street on its own because there's cars on both sides, that's a safety issue, especially with the university. Being right there, we got to be able to get emergency vehicles onto the campus, and going up Thomas into that side drive would be the easiest way for a fire truck to go versus making the turn off of Monroe.
So maybe that's something we can throw back to them to just give
us a
recommendation, right? Yeah, but I mean, in the meantime,
yeah, we got to talk to Jackson. But I'm not disagreeing.
Right.
I think Thomas probably needs some look at.
If the residents on the 1000 block of Jackson have this issue, then you know it's something we need to consider moving forward with. My only caveat would be that we need to then start looking at where this traffic is going to go, and you know they're going to go across the street, and we know that we're going to probably get that 900 block coming to us asking for the same.
Okay. Same
recommendation, so we just need to be cognizant that if these cars are being very rude and telling you that they're not going to listen to any recommendation, they're going to just go across the street.
We can enforce it.
We can just do it now. I mean, because you're right. I mean, Jackson's just 900 and 1,000.
Oh, you mean add resident parking? Yeah, but you need to get them notified. I mean,
I'd like to hear the neighbors actually.
Right.
If
they want it.
Maybe they want cars in front of their house.
I think just, you know, we'll probably hear from them once this happens, but maybe not. Maybe it won't be as bad. So.
I agree. So any other further questions or concerns? So before us, we have the motion seconded. Sounds like we had some good conversation. Sounds like the residents are still in favor of all of this. And so I will go ahead and ask the clerk to take the vote.
Is it on both sides?
Trustee Dwyer.
It's both sides. Resident parking only, both sides.
Well, what does the motion say?
Yeah. It says both sides of the street.
Both sides.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs?
Yes.
Yes. Trustee Corsini?
Yes.
Trustee Cargi?
Yes.
Trustee Conte?
Yes.
Motion passed.
Okay.
Then can I make a recommendation to somehow send back something to Traffic and Safety to review the Thomas block, or is that something that has to come from a resident?
No, it can come from us.
Oh, no, we can. That's fine. I think it's
a good point. They need to, you know, once we put these signs in, maybe just reevaluate that for safety purposes.
Let's make sure we're clear. Thomas.
Right, block. So the 7,500 block of
Thomas. Yeah, I agree. I think it does need to be looked at.
Monroe.
Chief, while we're all here talking about it, can we put a little heat on the parkers on Thomas? You got it? You're a good man, Charlie Brown.
I'm supposed to trade secrets, but I mean, is there like a normal rotation, or is it more responsive just to complaints of looking for?
It sounds like it should be one side parking on another side.
Try to pay attention to the whole town.
That narrow.
The balance.
Present
versus.
I'm sending an email to him now so we can make sure.
Right.
And then as a matter of process, Eric, will you send a note out to the block just to say that this was approved and so
yeah,
the residents
and then for
know?
The next one we would I'll see what else is in the pipeline. So if there's like we have another when our next meeting is, maybe we can package this together with something else.
Should we
Yeah, but you can't. I mean,
no,
first,
sure.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, though. That, so,
oh, you mean
I
as
mean,
far as
cost, maybe why people aren't complaining because
right.
it's just four houses.
Although
right.
they're pretty much full all the time, so I'd be, if I were them, I'd be a little annoyed. Yeah.
The law of unintended consequences says the 900 block and the 1100 block would now be affected. How
right.
do we keep an eye on that before yeah. it gets to a point where the citizenry has to come before us and say?
Well,
thanks for fixing 1,000. Now we're broken.
Well, not necessarily. I think Tom said it right. You know, we don't want to begin to start doing
right,
restrictions without.
We can keep an eye on
so
what happens at 9 and 10.
Well, we keep an eye on it, and I think if residents feel like, much like on the 1,100 block, that there's an issue, they're going to come before us and say something. All right. So.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can we just make sure that says 8 to 4 Monday through Friday? Oh, it does say excluding holidays. Okay, perfect. So that it's consistent with the rest
right.
of the sites. Okay.
Okay, moving right. on to 6B. If I can get a motion, this is to waive the formal bidding and award contract to BKD for professional auditing services in the amount of $32,750.
I will make a motion to accept the recommendation from the Finance Committee and approve an agreement with BKD LLP for professional auditing services for the fiscal year ending April 30th, 2017, with the option of auditing the four subsequent fiscal years.
Okay. Can I hear a second?
Second.
Okay. So maybe Carmela can
sure.
give us a little update, I mean, yeah. your Finance Committee and tell us.
So the Finance Committee met at 6:30 this evening, and on the agenda was to discuss the recommendation from the Finance Director regarding the RFP that was sent out and recommending that BKD, we approve an agreement with BKD for auditing services with the option of adding for subsequent fiscal years. We reviewed, she went over the process for the RFP, the review of the candidates that sent in, or the companies that sent in proposals, and we have actually Scott Termine here from BKD, and also Jody was the engagement partner that we've had on our account. She's here as well. I think if possible, we can have Joan just step to the microphone, and if the trustees have any questions, we discussed rotation of engagement partner, which is something that they're going to do for this next round. And I guess Joan can go over other items that are of concern.
Right. Okay. Yes. Great. Yeah, go ahead, John.
I've recommended BKD. I thought they were the lowest qualified proposer. The list of people that submitted proposals is in the memo. They took over Wolf & Company, which was our previous auditor, in 2014, and they've actually done our audit for 2015 and 2016. At the time that they took over our audit, they did a new internal control questionnaire, and they used different audit programs and procedures because they picked up a lot of BKD's procedures when the firm took over. So I feel it's a fresh look. I know there was some concern about that. I requested that they change the partner and the staff on the engagement. So Scott Termine is a different partner. Jody previously had been our partner on the job. And they're also going to be changing the staff, so John won't be on the audit anymore either. I don't know if there's any other questions on that. When I asked them to change the partner and the staff, I didn't know they were going to be the lowest proposer, but they were. So they're a very qualified firm. They provide a lot of added service. They provide emails with information on GASBs. They provide webinars. They're always available to answer questions that we have that come up during the year. And I think they do a great job. So,
I know you're looking at me. I did have a question, not along the lines of rotation policy, not necessarily, you know, the firm that we chose. I mean, you're a great firm, and it's the right choice in terms of, you know, the lowest responsible bidder. My question has always been, you know, should we as a organization and as fiduciaries of our village request that we have a rotation policy, either rotation of the organization, rotation of the partner, could be all of the above in my mind. And I think we ought to. The two are dovetailing it tonight, but it is because this is before us tonight. Mm-hmm. So I'd ask the board, as the village president, I think it's probably responsible. Fiscally responsible of us to consider creating a policy that announces those rotations, and again, whether it's the organization or even the partner in charge and the manager in charge. I know you've sent some good information, pros and cons, but you know, clearly it appears that there are more pros on rotation than there are cons on rotation, and it seems like most boards, privately and publicly, do create such policy. So I'll just open it up to the board and get their thoughts on, and I know you have great experience in this, and so I'd love to get your experience.
So we did talk about that at the meeting, and basically we have a policy in place right now where we go out to bid every 5 years obviously just check in, make sure we're getting good pricing, fair, just to check what's out there as far as professional firms that do audit municipalities. So we are doing that. We did talk about it possibly at our next full finance committee meeting, discussing upgrading our policy to include rotation of engagement partners as a formalized policy. So that'll give us a little bit more time to just evaluate how that would work and just check out what other recommendations GFOA has and things of that nature. So it is something that we're going to hopefully do at the next full finance committee meeting. At this point, you know, I think we were comfortable with the fact that, you know, we're going to engage these auditors because our deadline is pretty close to having to get our date settled for the audit for this coming fiscal year. Ending fiscal year. So we were comfortable with moving forward with this, and we also discussed, you know, if there's change in personnel at some point in the near future, that it would be better for continuity purposes to at least have a firm that has the institutional knowledge to continue while we have that that switchover, and then at that point, you know, this board or whoever's on this board could take a look at detailing other policies as far as whether you want to rotate or not. Now, there's obviously with Sarbanes-Oxley, we talked about, you know, for public companies, there's mandatory rotation of partners, engagement partners in firms. So, you know, that's something that we can take a look at for us as well, even though we're not a public company. So we are going to discuss that at an upcoming finance committee meeting. So I think it's something we should consider. And if there's other comments or questions, I think Joan would welcome those as well.
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of follow up on that too, I mean, the idea of a firm, you know, rotation, you know, I think it's more of an interesting issue than to discuss, but I think there's more detrimental effects to actually the practical side of it. You do lose institutional knowledge, and to this today, we're not aware of any independence issues that have affected, you know, their capability to actually, you know, provide us with a clean opinion. So I think there's one article in here that I think everybody should read is the AICPA article on there, which does talk to the fact that it really is, you know, this concept is just, it's interesting to talk about, but there's no real statistics that support that it's actually good for the village or obviously for BKD either. But I think it's worth discussing. We can talk about it further, but that's kind of, I think you lose more than what you gain, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's that great debate, but I think as, you know, one of our, probably our primary responsibilities as Board of Trustees and Directors is to...
But switching a firm doesn't change that obligation, nor does it alleviate risk. That's the other thing, that's kind of the misnomer. Just changing it just makes people's, you know, who are involved in the day-to-day stuff, you know, potentially more of a pain
possible
in the ass.
I mean, GFLA has a different perspective on it, too. I mean, you can...
Right.
So, I mean, I agree. I'm not saying, Tom, that there isn't pros and cons. I just think as fiduciaries of whatever, are, you know, that we're responsible for, it might be worth, you know, certainly considering that policy. And I think the policy, and I agree, the Finance Committee should look at it, but I think the policy should be a rotation of our firms as well as the rotation of the partner.
If you keep the, if it stays in house and you just rotate partners, do you maintain a Chinese wall between the previous engagement partner and the new one?
Yeah, so there would be no ongoing involvement.
So you lose that institutional knowledge. But I sort of agree with Tom. I'm not sure. I sort of see it in the corporate world because of more, you don't want the familiarity with the board and management with the accounting firm. But from a government side, I'm not sure the benefit of the loss of the institutional knowledge is worth the fresh eyes. And that's just.
Wow.
I mean, this is an accountant talking, so it just seems to me, from our perspective, I'm not sure I see the value, but I haven't done a lot of research on it. Either, so.
Well, I think the flip is the municipalities, at least those that we've looked at. I mean, a lot of municipalities do have a rotation policy of some kind, or what we're doing here, where we'll rotate the partner.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to it. I just think.
I mean, it gives you those fresh eyes. It gives the check and balances that I think is important. I mean, again, I mean, we have all the respect and confidence in the staff, but it's not about the staff, but, you know, we're all going to be somewhere else in 20 years, and the policy will remain.
So. Well, and like I said, I think it's something we'll look at and when we have a little bit more time to do some research and take a look at what other best practices are with regard to that, and I mean, I don't have an issue with talking about that.
How many years did Wolf...
They started in 2008. Prior to that, we had Miller Cooper.
So for almost 10 years, right? Yeah.
But this is not Wolf and Company.
Right. Well, yeah, it's the former company.
I mean, their whole
audit procedures
changed. BKD
is a much larger company than Wolf and Company.
So 2008 to 2015. So
let's agree. I mean,
right.
And then we have an option of renewing them. We don't have the application. So
right.
If we do decide to make a policy, we're at
right.
3 years.
These are annual engagements that you do. So you're not locked into a five-year contract.
Right.
And basically, the reason why you went out for 5 years is just to get some pricing
right.
benefits. But you contract auditors on an annual basis on an engagement level. So there's nothing to say that, you know.
It's normal to have an extended engagement because there's higher costs in the first year. And they don't usually make any money on the first year of the audit because of the higher costs associated with it. So you do a longer-term engagement so that it can be profitable for them.
But, Joan, is Susan right that it's basically one-year options?
We do an engagement letter every year. We don't normally come back to the board every year.
Huh.
And, you know, of these firms, I mean, there's some, like the first one, you know, they didn't have as much municipal experience, so even though they were the lowest bidder, you know, their service is not going to be as
correct
good as, you know, others. And, you know, we have received the IGFOA award how many years in a row now?
Not sure, sorry.
So only some you know, with the certification process, I mean, that's important as well, you know, to make sure that these auditing firms are up to speed on the certificates. You know, I mean, they're all qualified. It just becomes a matter of, you know, who has more experience with municipal.
Right. And I like to be with a firm that has strong accounting experience and knowledge so that I can ask a question. I usually review the GASBs and go to training, and so the questions that I come up with are sometimes higher level, and I like to have a firm that I am confident in their response to me. So there's not a lot of firms that have that level of knowledge.
Right. And I agree. I mean, it's interesting. You had sent me the Village of Round Lake. They've got a rotation policy. It's a nice short policy. So I appreciate, and it says right there, you know, the director of finance would have the responsibility, of course, to find and recommend the most qualified
right.
firm. So I think I don't want to get what we're trying
to
accomplish.
I couldn't find a lot of rotation policies. I tried, but I was just doing it today, so I didn't have a lot of time to put into it. I know a lot of villages that have been with the same auditors forever. Like, mm-hmm. a lot of them are with Sickich, and they've been with them for 25 years. So I know a lot that stick with the same firm. I will try to, before our finance committee meeting, try to seek out some more policies and see what other...
I think it's worth the conversation at the committee level, and I think it's worth, you know... again, I think we can make it as such that it's not constricting what I think the finance director needs over the long term. All right, so with that, unless there's other questions pertaining to the BKD, they're here today. If anybody
did
has
you want
would
Scott
stop?
To
you,
come
would
up
you,
and
anybody
would
like
say
to
hello our new
sure.
Partner?
Let's take the podium, Scott.
You didn't think you'd get away with not speaking.
Sure. So thank you all for having us here tonight, and hopefully be able to continue to extend our relationship. Joan already alluded to some of the internal procedural type changes that we've made significantly as she talked about some of the new GASB changes and things. Mm-hmm. That is one of the things that can become a full-time job these days. GASB just continues to rain down new standards, so we do stay on top of those and try to keep our clients up to speed on those. I do serve on the Illinois Government Finance Officers Association's Technical Accounting Review Committee. So we review all of the proposed new standards on behalf of Illinois municipalities, and it's made up of both auditors as well as finance directors. So providing feedback on your behalf ultimately, and there is a significant change that's being proposed and talked about right now. So trying to bring those things to your attention is where I think we can hopefully continue to bring value, as well as addressing kind of on an ongoing basis. We encourage all of our clients to contact us as situations arise. We're happy to address those things with you as they're occurring, rather than waiting until audit time where we just have a once a year type dialogue. So again, look forward to working with Joan and her staff, and then all of you ultimately to continue to provide the audit then. If there are any questions I can answer in terms of the specific procedural changes that we went through, I'd be happy to do that, but certainly want to be sensitive to your time as well.
Questions? I have none. So it sounds like you've worked with our finance committee, so, and Joan, we're good with that.
Okay, good. Yeah, from the discussion, then we've talked, as you alluded to, it is the great debate. There's a number of different schools of thought, and there's a lot of studies out there and articles that
right.
can kind of address both sides. We can certainly help Joan get her hands on some of those if you'd like. As you continue to explore the policy change, we'd be happy to do that.
That would be great. I mean, just again, from an, you know, exploring it to see what's out there. Like I said, it is, you can probably grab a lot of data from different points of view.
Right.
But I think we ought to have the conversation. I think we ought to have the debate and then make a decision as a whole, as a board, where we ought to land. So we could say that we did do that.
Yeah. So yep. Happy to help in that regard.
Good. And so with that
you,
piece, and I'll say to Trustee Corsini, you know, your next finance committee, I would, you know, like to start that conversation
yes.
and see where we go with it. Okay. I any further questions for our guest here, BKD?
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Hearing no more, we'll go ahead and take the vote.
Trustee Gibbs?
Yes.
Trustee Corsini?
Yes.
Trustee Cargi?
Yes.
Trustee Conte?
Yes.
Trustee Dwyer?
Yes.
Motion passed.
Okay, very good. Congratulations.
Thank
and
you. Thank you all.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to eight. No unfinished business, so we have no seven. Number eight. This is a resolution authorizing the execution of a stormwater facility access inspection repair license agreement between the village and Concordia. So if I can have someone move to approve
Make
this.
Make a motion to approve a resolution authorizing the execution of a stormwater facilities access inspection and repair license agreement between the Village of River Forest and Concordia University of Chicago.
Okay, thank you. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay. I think that was Tom. Dwyer. Okay. So any discussions? Maybe you want to, Eric, give a little briefing on what this is?
Sure. This was born out of discussion after can be approved the plan development application for Concordia and started working on the due diligence of getting their permits approved and things like that. What we started to do on our larger scale development projects is require a permanent easement on the property to allow the village access to stormwater facilities moving forward. So we did that out on the townhomes on the former Heinz Lumber property. And typically on the development side, the developers don't object to that. They realize that once they build the development and move on, they're gone. And if there's an issue out there, the village needs to access it as it relates to public utilities or even private utilities that may feed into public utilities, the village wants access unfettered to do what it needs to do. And so we approached Concordia with that. They had a different mindset towards our approach. And it really, it's born out of the fact that unlike a development project where the developer comes in, builds the project and leaves and realizes that the village is going to be there to handle any issues that arise, Concordia is still there. They're still obviously on their property. They were concerned about easement language that would potentially restrict their ability to get loans for their projects. So we kind of put our heads together and said, well, is there another way we can tackle this? And so what you have before you tonight is the work of Greg Smith, the folks at Concordia, putting our heads together and really trying to create more of a broader agreement, not the easement, keep in mind, only address the development of the dormitory, okay? This is a master agreement that will grant the the village access for all of the stormwater utilities on the property. So it's greater in scope, gives us a reach over everything. And I should point out, though, this is important because ultimately, as other plan developments come forward with our institutional partners, this is a template then we will use on a going forward basis. So you'll see something to this effect, is our hope, as other institutional folks come forward for their developments as well.
I just had a question on the term. So it's 5 years with automatic renewal. It's not something that you would come back to the board to discuss, update?
No, so the way the term is written is that it is it renews every 5 years. It's perpetual.
And it is the hope that we, you know, never really have to use this either. This is something that we would use in a more of an emergency situation in the event there was something going on their property that would ultimately affect health, safety, welfare of any of the students or faculty at Concordia, or could have some sort of effect on the utilities in the rest of the village. So the likelihood of the village using this is probably, I would say, more in the low category, much like that SSA that we've implemented out at Heinz as a backup in case the HOA fails. I hope we never, ever, ever have to use that, but these are just best practices. You know, we have a very between John Anderson and Jeff Loster, a very talented public works and engineering staff. So they're taking a lot of their knowledge and their experience they're getting and a lot of their training and trying to implement a lot of these best practices. So
with Dominican, we would wait until they do some kind of a project or whatnot in order to try and implement this with them, or do we approach them and say, hey, this is what we're doing with Concordia?
We could do that. We could start trying to pick off, if you will, all of our institutional folks, and we could start with the universities. I think you know, you just have to keep in mind there's a lot of institutional folks. So you're not only looking at the universities, you're looking at the schools, the churches, all those things. So, and not all of them may have stormwater facilities, so we'd have to look at that, you know, on a case-by-case basis. The development provides a natural review, kind of a natural organic point to have that conversation. But it's as time allows, we can certainly talk to folks.
No emergency.
Yeah, and I think it's probably wise to do it this way, because then you're just building to it, and it becomes your policy. So back to your question, too. You know, for me, it's an administrative staff issue that if we at the board agree that this is our policy, then I see the rest of it just more administrative. Mm-hmm. So if you want to make it 5 years, 7 years, however, I mean, that's your call. But, I mean, the question on the floor here is this the right policy to – it appears to make some sense. I'm just throwing that out. Any other questions on that? Okay. Lost Mike.
So from a cost perspective, there's really no, you're not going to incur any costs for servicing, and if you do, I mean, you'd be able to then ask for reimbursement on that.
Right. So, I mean, again, in the event there was an emergency, the chance of something happening on off hours and we discovered it, you know, we would probably send Public Works out there to do that and handle those issues. Again, in most situations, if we find something, we're hoping that the institution itself takes care of it, right? So, again, this is just the worst-case scenario. The agreement does allow us to go back and invoice Concordia for those costs if they were to challenge it. I know Greg could probably speak more to the process that would follow after that.
Right. They have to pay 60 days from invoice if the village incurs costs to maintain their stormwater facilities if they fail to do so.
And in most cases, I mean, if it's a big problem, you're going to be contracting that service out, right? So in most cases, you're not going to have your Public Works people fixing, you know, let's say Coatline campus.
Or right. And it doesn't necessarily mean that it is an emergency. It's something we could discover and go back to Concordia and say, we think you need to fix this or address this, work out a solution, and then they hire someone to go do it, and we don't incur any cost.
Yeah. And it doesn't transfer responsibility for the issue from to us in any way.
That's correct.
Yeah, there's the
it's
whole
permissive.
There.
It's not mandatory. The village doesn't have any obligations under the agreement. It just allows us to do inspections or repairs if they fail to do so.
It's really, nice. It's kind of that, it's the new world order as it relates to stormwater, in that municipalities are becoming more active in terms of having the ability to access these infrastructure points on private property. The MWRD is getting more involved in it. And if you go out to the Coward counties, like the Kane, where I had worked previously, and I know Jeff had worked in DuPage, John worked in DuPage a little bit. This is like just daily practice out there. So Cook County is a little bit behind the curve, and we're starting to catch up. But what we're doing here is not earth shattering or radical by any means as it relates to stormwater policy.
Yeah, makes sense. All right. Okay, if we can ask the clerk to take the vote, please, sons.
Trustee Corsini?
Yes.
Trustee Cargi?
Yes.
Trustee Conte?
Yes.
Trustee Dwyer?
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs?
Yes.
Motion passed.
Okay. So the last item on new business is a resolution in support of federal legislation requiring universal background checks for all gun sales. Right now, if I can get a motion for 8B, to approve the resolution in support of the federal legislation requiring universal background checks for all gun sales.
I'll move to approve a resolution in support of the federal legislation requiring universal background checks for all gun sales.
Okay. Okay. Your second?
I'll second.
Okay. All right. I know there were people on the audience today that were here, I think, several weeks ago at our meeting, and both Trustee Cargi and Trustee Stanky, who is in Iceland today, had requested a more conversation around this and hopefully a support behind the resolution. I think on your desk there should be an amended resolution from your packet. Thank you. I know I had it here. And You could see the amended one was basically taking out the automatic high-capacity assault weapon and then changing the OPARC referendum results to the River Force referendum results, which still are fairly significantly high. So is there any questions or comments on this resolution? Again, it's just a resolution. We have no legislative powers to enforce these laws, just standing behind what these laws could do and could mean. That's what the resolution is.
Yeah, I'll start. The reason I asked to put on the agenda was because basically in the whereas clause about the last advisory referendum, our town spoke fairly loudly at 86 in favor of the resolution. To me, this is an opportunity for us to enact something that our villages are sort of demanding. And so that's why I asked that we put on the agenda for tonight.
And my only comment on this stuff, too, is just something like this is, you know, what's the value of this to, you know, to our village if it's something that's just a resolution? It's not law. It's just really a statement, kind of. I mean, we're not, as a board, I mean, where's the value in us making this proclamation other than any different than saying it at a bar or at somebody's house? I mean, what's the purpose?
It represents the residents of River Forest. I mean,
yeah, but we're not changing law here. We're not changing police behavior. We're not changing village, you know, behavior. We're not changing. We're just making a comment that, you know, it's more of a personal
with the first
opinion.
Step, Tom.
Pardon?
Every journey starts with the first step.
I just want to make sure I know which direction I'm going.
Yeah. I mean, so to answer your question, why resolutions? I mean, we just passed the resolution that was 8A. I mean, we do it often to make a statement as a board to whether or not we support, you know, these issues, these concerns. I mean, we make resolutions all the time.
Well,
so, I mean,
my point is we shouldn't do something just for the point of doing something. This is kind of a little bit to the same thing we're talking about the auditors before. I think it's along the same lines of we're just doing it to do it. We're not actually thinking about the reasoning behind it.
I'll just say no. The audit is to me is just a good reason is for checks and balances, but which has nothing to do with this.
Yeah, but again, you look at the support, you look at the statistics, and you look at the AICPA, which is a very strong governing body. And this is kind of getting off topic. That's it doesn't support it. It's actually more detriment to it than other.
The GFA, okay.
So again, we're saying something for the whole purpose of just to say it. It's like okay, it has no effect, but we're going to say it anyway.
I don't want it to be because the GFA always has a different viewpoint. But
the advocates for gun resolution would like to use these sorts of or gun background checks rather. Would like to use these sorts of formal documents to say to legislators, look, these are all the people that support it. We got a resolution from all these towns that support it. So it's not just simply a feel-good pat on the back thing. I mean, I think it's just simply, again, formalizing what our residents have already said to us. That's why, if it came out.
Well, that makes
50-50,
sense. I mean, is there legislation currently?
I wouldn't have pushed it, but this is really strong. I mean, 86% of the residents of River Forest favor universal background checks. And so, you had to go to the clerk's website to figure that out. This is a way of just simply saying that we, River Forest, support universal background checks.
Do we have legislation in the state of Illinois or the feds right now? It's currently.
No, not in this administration.
No.
What's the state of Illinois status with background checks? Yeah.
Right now, to be effective, it's got to be nationwide. Because, you know, most of the guns that come into Chicago come in from Indiana.
Right.
So, even I don't know if Illinois has universal, probably doesn't, because the Illinois NRA is pretty strong.
Oh, it's the federal side.
But
so there was legislation, then it would make sense that, you know, something like this.
There is legislation that was moving, and it did fail at the federal side.
After the Sandy Hook, they were like one senator short.
Four.
Four
senators.
54 to 60. I was just curious if it can be just an act on a state-by-state basis.
I think really could, but I don't think it would be effective.
Yeah, it can be. Yes, it can. And some states have. Illinois is not.
Mm. Yeah, right. Illinois does not have.
I do think this is unusual for us to do, and I'm a little bit mixed about it, but I'm not really mixed about the resolution itself. So I think it really probably is the one thing that, that makes sense, especially when we reflect the will of the voters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's the purpose of, you know, this particular resolution, but most resolutions, it's trying to represent the will of the voters and the will of the people. That's what we represent. Okay, any questions at all regarding the language in this? Hearing no further questions, and let's go ahead and vote.
Trustee Corsini?
Yes.
Trustee Cargi?
Yes.
Trustee Conte?
Yes.
Trustee Dwyer?
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs?
Yes.
Motion passed.
Okay. All right, so there you go. You're welcome. All right. Well, we're moving along. Well, thank you. Thank you for everyone being here. Let's go. Now we're going to go down to executive session. So if I can get a motion to move into executive session.
I'll move to recess for executive session to discuss the acquisition of real property and probable and imminent litigation.
Second.
Yeah. Okay. Second. Mike, was you? Did you second? Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Take 2 minutes. I move to open or go into open session.
Okay.
Any second.
Thanks. Any issues?
You have to take a roll.
Oh, yeah. Hold on.
Roll call. That's a good idea.
Trustee Cargi? Trustee Conte? Trustee Dwyer?
Yeah, here.
Trustee Gibbs?
Here.
Trustee Corsini?
Here.
President Ducey?
Here.
So we have no regular meeting this month. We have, or March, but we have two Committee of the Whole meetings. Is that right? On your report here?
Yeah, well, that's a good. March 13th is a regular.
And then you have a 20th, too.
I will be here the 13th.
Yeah.
So if you're is anyone else not going to be here on the 13th? March 13th, Monday?
The 27th is going to be our week that we're going to take off. Is that when everyone's gone?
Yeah, but you have the 20th also as a COW meeting.
Yeah, so the only the other big outstanding issue is just we're pulling the budget together. So
okay.
The budget document itself is just getting compiled. So all the numbers are done. We're just putting on the window dressing.
And that's going to be on the...
We haven't made a final
determination. Oh, okay.
We have to talk to Jones.
So the 6th is not...
Which one that?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the 6th,
all right.
March 6th is not happening.
Okay,
we'll
all right.
Cancel that.
So could be the 20th.
Could be the 20th.
But sometime this month.
Yes.
And then we just have one regular meeting on the 13th.
Correct.
Okay.
27.
Thank you.
The last
week. Spring break?
I moved to adjourn.
Last week.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Okay.